This A's Cast download is brought to you by Link Soul. Check out their spring collection. Go to linksoul.com. And by Nest Bedding. Love where you sleep. Go to nestbedding.com.
The Eno Saris Show is sponsored by Fieldwork Brewing Company. With 8 taproom locations in Northern California, Fieldwork brings you fresh craft beer direct from the source. Fieldwork will also ship beer direct to your door if you live in California. Visit fieldworkbrewing.com.
How are you, my friend?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Before we get into it, I teased telling everybody about really how hard it is to change teams, and we haven't really thought about that a lot. I mean, it's hard just to change a regular job in the same town, let alone do it in different cities. We'll get into that. But I was just talking about before you came on, just looking at the MLB notes today and seeing, you know, what happened last night in Boston with Chris Sale, what you're seeing today between Boston and the Rays with Glasnow, who might, you know, how hurt he has been. Whitlock, Garrett Whitlock's coming back from an elbow injury. I mean, this is like, this is what baseball is, right? Star pitcher gets hurt last night. I mean, hard to believe Glasnow is going to be 30 coming up here in August, and he just has a career record of 20-20. He has just started 68 games in his career. I mean, isn't this last, like, 24 hours in Boston kind of told you the state of where pitching is today?
Yeah, Chris Sale goes down with a shoulder injury. That's, you know, what's kind of interesting is we've caught, like, before we had all these diagnostic equipment and, you know, the doctors, I think a lot of times elbow pain traveled up to the shoulders. And so what you have seen is an increase in elbow injuries and a decrease in shoulder injuries during this time. So we're catching things earlier. And that's why, you know, Tommy John is better than career-ending labrum surgery, you know.
Yes.
And so in some effect, we are lengthening careers, but it doesn't feel like that in the moment because we're catching every little thing. We're putting them on the IL to try and coach them through it, get them through it. We have slowed down a little bit. There was the early real boost, I think, from people getting used to the pitch clock. We saw that people that were slow were getting hurt more than people that were fast before. So we did see that the pitch clock had some effect on injuries, but we've slowed down a little bit. And the guys that are healthy are trying to stay healthy, but Tyler Glasnow is a microcosm of the game today. He throws real hard, throws two pitches and is injured all the time.
But getting back, and it makes me think of my era, and I don't know if you think I'm a dinosaur, but it's my era, early 90s. Are we dinosaur? Mark Kotze and I are the same era.
I was raised on that ball.
We put snot on the baseball back in our day. That's what we but it is interesting because our biggest fear back in the day was shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
You were so terrified of the shoulder, but it's interesting you say that.
It's
you
still the biggest deal.
But you protected the elbow, which ended up hurting the shoulder. We now have a way to get rid of that. So that's really most of the injuries we have now are all elbow, when back then a lot were shoulders.
Yeah, and we're even doing things where we have like flexor surgery, where you're having surgery before the elbow. I mean, it's all a kinetic chain, and you know, the shoulder is the worst one. And really, we don't have that many success stories for shoulder surgery still to this day. Almost all of them were really young. Julio Urias was really young when he had it. He just retired. He pitched for, I think he pitched for the A's. He pitched for the Nationals. Anibal Sanchez.
Yeah.
He was a guy that had labrum surgery. And that's like, those are the two names that I think of.
Yeah, we don't have a Tommy John for as we're talking about the great Tommy John, the pitcher who had the surgery. We don't have that guy for shoulders.
Yeah.
You know, they never had that. And people need to understand the way your shoulder and goes into the socket, and there's three different ligaments that are holding the ball into the socket. Like, you mess that up, man, you're done.
Yeah, it's just so important, and it's such a big joint, you know. the smaller the joint is. Like Eduardo Rodriguez has a little finger pulley problem. It's a problem. He's going to have surgery, but it's not a thing that you'd be like, oh, I'm worried about him long term, you know. But the bigger the joint, the bigger deal it is. And, you know, I do think that,
you know, they've been saying that in the Bay Area for years, the bigger the joint. I've heard that for years, ever since I was in college.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, we're catching things earlier, but it also in the moment feels like it's just injury after injury. And, you know, I tried to do some rankings today, and a lot of the big problem in ranking pitchers right now is just finding the healthy ones. I mean, my number one is still Jake DeGrom, and he's not even healthy right now.
Your number one still DeGrom?
Yeah, he's throwing bullpens. I think he'll be back out there. I don't know.
I don't know what your guys' obsession with this guy is. We know what he is. You guys are obsessed with this guy. Data people are obsessed with him. The best ability is availability.
Yeah.
And even when he's great, what did he do against the Padres last year in the playoffs? He gave you 6 innings. I mean, you're only going to get 6 innings from him. Like, how great can these 6 innings be that we just obsess with the greatness of Jacob DeGrom?
Well, it's 2/3 of the game, and nobody else is giving you 9. That's done. Right.
But you know what? We still got some important innings left, and he's not a part of it. So He gives me 6. I just don't know. I understand his ability to throw hard, his ability to throw great strikes, and his ability to have like a 92-mile-an-hour slider. It's great. It's just we have this obsession with a guy who can't play.
Well, from a team-building standpoint, it's better to have him in place in any given season and then look for relievers. Like, for example, the Rangers' relief squad is not that good this year. You know, it's probably their worst aspect of their team. And yet, that's one of the easiest things to upgrade at the deadline. So what are the Rangers going to do at the deadline? They're going to get a reliever or two.
So we think. But we were just going over this, and Jerry Dipoto of the Seattle Mariners, I can't call them GMs anymore. Everybody, I can't keep
president of baseball operations.
Is he the president? Is he the star? They all have these titles. President of what? I mean, is he a VP? I mean, I don't know. But Jerry Dipoto, who runs the Mariners, recently came out and said, yeah, I mean, people should be doing business now. But reality is there's so many conservative type people in front offices, and so many people are in it that we're not going to, see a whole lot of deals. And the guy who's the biggest wheeler and dealer of all, AJ Preller, he's out of cards. He has nothing to deal.
He's got a couple prospects, but I almost feel like for the Padres, a smaller deal like Randall Grichuk would make sense. Just to get a right-hander in that outfield to pair with Grisham, something small. Because the last two guys they have is a 16-year-old catcher who's, you know, one of the top prospects, but he's 16. And then, you know, they have like a 17-year-old shortstop. You know, you really have to go to the real youngins.
Is that legal to trade a 16-year-old?
But, you know, we talked about this on the 3-0 show yesterday, and one thing that's really interesting is you brought up two parts of it. One part is they're conservative, and the reason I think that teams are conservative, nobody wants to sell now because the biggest draw for butts and seats, you know, this is a big discussion right now because of Vegas and the A's and this and that. The biggest draw, if we look through the numbers, the biggest draw is being good. And if you say to your fans right now, you're the Cincinnati Reds, you're almost 500, you're kind of in it, you know, but you say to your Reds, we're going to sell Alexis Diaz or we're going to sell Lucas Sims and we're going to get worse. You're not setting yourself up to have more fans in seats the rest of the season.
But wait for firework night in September.
Yeah, come for drone shows. So, you know, I think that's part of the process is just being like, how long can we wait and pretend we're still in it? You know, there are teams that have no chance right now, that 0% possibility of making the playoffs. That's the Nationals, the Royals, the Rockies, and the A's. But some of those teams.
Whoa. Wait a minute.
Sorry. Yeah, I was trying to slip that in.
You're not supposed to tell people that. We don't do that in life, damn it.
But those teams could be open for business. Some of those teams don't have that much to trade. And I won't name all of them.
No, but that's the thing. I did a whole monologue on that today going, you know, this is where the coaches, you know, Shintaro's going to be the opener today. This is where you got to get Aletmus Diaz. This is where you got to get Britt Rooker. This is where you got to get Ramon Laureano. Get Tony Kempf. Get these guys figured out so we can move them, because there's not many casinos open.
Yeah.
We could be a casino open to do some gambling.
If Ramon Laureano can get going again, he would actually become one of the easiest to acquire best corner outfielders out there. Because I was trying to get a corner outfield on the Padres and put Tatis in center. And I was looking, and it's Lane Thomas or Randall Grichuk. Like, if Ramon Laureano is doing what he can do, then he's better than those two guys. So, you know, that's definitely the coaching staff, and they should be playing Ramon. You know, there's this weird thing where they're not playing Ramon, and I think it has to do with the fact that, like, oh, they're trying to win games or whatever, but, you know, and Ramon, they're playing him against lefties more than righties. I would be playing Ramon Laureano every day and be like, hey, boy, like buddy, let's get you through this slump that you're in and get you out of there. So the other thing is, the most interesting teams are ones that are okay-ish and have some assets, but don't want to blow it up yet and have weird front office situations. Like, I think one of the most interesting teams is the White Sox, because they've been doing this thing where they're like, have good players but aren't good for a while. And you just wonder, can that front office do a rebuild and still keep their jobs? Is the reason they're not, like, you know, tearing it down to studs to keep their jobs? Because if you do a rebuild, you have to tell Jerry Reinsdorf, hey, can you give me 5 more years? You know, we're starting the rebuild again.
He's late 80s, right, Reinsdorf?
Yeah, I don't think he wants that. So, you know, they have some of the best relievers that are out there that could be acquired. And and I think people would want to do business with them, but, you know, what are they going to do?
Yeah, Reinsdorf is 87 years old. Yeah, I don't think he's ready for a rebuild. I think after bringing in Tony La Russa, I think he...
That's
he
right, yeah. Most of his moves have been win-now moves.
You guys have talked about on The Athletic about moving, and Marcus Semien, who you mentioned, I remember... We were down at the winter meetings. You were on the show with us in 2019, and Marcus was down there getting an award. His wife was off to the side. I was talking about him staying with the A's, and she was behind him going like this. I mean, they're Bay Area people. Then off to Toronto, which, you know, they were, because of COVID and still restrictions in Canada, that was crazy. And then they got the young boys, and then now they're in Texas and have a home there and moved there full time. I mean, moving around, especially a guy with a young family, it's not easy. Switching teams, we make it seem like it's easy because you're living in your house, I'm living in my house. We make it seem like moving around's easy. It is not. Moving families and wives and kids and your career and different coaches and different spring trainings, and all of it is chaos, and it's not easy to do.
Yeah, I love Marcus. It was a great conversation, and it was wide-ranging. I mean, one of the things he brought up again was that he really was serious about, you know, the one-year offer to the A's to come back without a pay raise. So, you know, he did not want to move, and he's, you know, he's got the roots in the area, and he, you know, he wanted to stay. But then when he went to Toronto, he said he credited the coaching staff there with doing a great job getting him on second base, you know, new position, new team, and coaching him into that. And he wasn't saying that the Rangers weren't as good as that, but when he switched the Rangers, he also hit the lockout. So not only was it a new team, but he couldn't go to a team facility because of the lockout. But one thing that sort of that brought to mind, and for him, it was very specific that was very difficult because of those young boys you mentioned. Like, he's uprooting kids and putting them in a new school, having to get a whole new routine with them, waking up at 6 a.m. to get them to school and then being tired because he just went to bed at 1, you know. So, like, there's this whole thing that's specific to him. But the thing that is general, you can see it in the numbers, and it's something that you can tell intuitively. It's hard. It's really hard to do this. And what happens is, if I'm a free agent, my old team doesn't give me a plan for the offseason. They don't tell me what to work on or what machines to do or what lift weightlifting to do. They don't give me a plan. I'm out the door. And my new team is, I don't have a new team yet. So I don't have team facilities. I don't have team personnel. I don't have access to a whole part of my normal routine in the off season. And he said that this off season he had that. He's a top 10 player in the league again. You know, so, you know, that's, you can really see the value there. But, you know, I've also pointed out that, like, team switchers press at the plate. They swing more. They chase more on their new team. So there's a psychological aspect, too, where you join this new team. You sign a $300 million deal like Trey Turner, you know, and you join this new team and you're kind of, you maybe you don't do something in the first three games. All of a sudden, you can be pressing. You know, you're just like, oh, my God. You know, everyone here in Philadelphia already thinks I'm a bust. And I'm a new kid in the clubhouse, and I got to do something about it. So you swing more, you chase more, and it's not necessarily the best baseball you ever played in your life. So, you know, that's a psychological aspect that you can actually see in the numbers. And I find that fascinating. I it's something that we, even as, non-baseball players can imagine is something that's pretty tough to do.
How about Chris Bryant? Chris Bryant just came back, and you're looking at his numbers. How pathetic his numbers have been from a power standpoint, especially at Coors Field. Think about signing that huge deal. Not are you not playing well, but you're not staying healthy.
Yeah, that's a double whammy, I think. That's a really tough one. And, you know, that not for nothing, that's a underreported aspect of why it's difficult to play in Coors. You know, just recovering is more difficult. Like, you know, injuries take longer. They're often among the most injured teams. You know, players tell me that they weightlift on the road. Like Rockies players tell me they weightlift on the road because they want to get that nice recovery in at sea level. They don't want to weightlift back at home. So they have to like do this whole thing where they're trying to recover on the road so they don't have to recover at, you know, 5,000 feet up in the air.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, you know, my time working in the NFL with the Raiders and you know, playing the Broncos twice a year, and always talking about, you know, what you have to do to go play at Mile High and then getting to know Bronco people and talking about, man, playing up here, practicing every day. It's why boxers, you know, Oscar De La Hoya would always go to Big Bear to train and to run and the elevations.
The marathoners are all from Somalia.
Yeah, and think about how tough it is to play in the NBA or hockey. When you're playing in Denver and you're playing in elevation.
Nuggets have the biggest home field advantage in sports by numbers.
They run you off the floor. I mean, you can't breathe.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's like I remember with the Raiders, we had this whole debate on when to go to Mexico City because of the elevation to take on the Patriots. I mean, elevation is no joke. Elevation sickness. Now, Denver's not high enough, but Mexico City's high enough. People can get elevation sickness. I've been to Breckenridge, Colorado, with people who got altitude sickness. They were wiped out. So, yeah, that's a big deal. People don't talk about how tough it is, and that's one of the reasons why I hate Todd Helton doesn't get love for the Hall of Fame is there's something to be said about being an everyday player in elevation.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't think, it's one of the things I don't think the numbers account for fully, and people just want to just, you know, take his road OPS. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's fair because – you know, you see a bunch of fastballs at home, you go on the road, you see a bunch of junk. It's not like, you know, there is a road penalty to being a Rocky. You know, like the game is played totally different everywhere else except for home. So you have to, like, get adjusted to that.
I know you guys soon are going to start talking about, well, look who's having the best year, look who's having MVPs. Like, all of a sudden you looked up and you go, wow. Aaron Judge is having almost the exact same or even a little bit of a better season that he did last year. Otani's doing what he's doing. Yandy's been doing what he's doing in Tampa. Garcia has been doing what he's been doing in Texas. Simeon in Texas. I mean, this MVP race in the American League could be incredible.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know if you mentioned him, but Wander in Tampa, did you say his name?
I didn't say his name, but I got him on my fantasy team, so I know exactly how he's doing.
I mean, he's having like a big sort of power breakout and has 20 stolen bases, is playing shortstop for the team that has the most wins, you know, up there and wins above replacement. So, yeah, I think, and one of the things that does happen, and we've talked about this on your show before, is that people It's the Willie Mays problem where, and the Mike Trout problem where they're just like, well, we can't give Shohei Ohtani the award every year. We can't give Willie Mays the award every year, you know? So, you know, I often kind of, my eye wanders to these new stories and, wander, being the pun there. So, I think that, you know, he's a dark horse that, that may establish himself as the favorite, over time, but you know, the NL one's not bad either. And, you know, the Dodgers are supposed to take a step
Freddie
back.
Freddie Freeman. Wow.
The Dodgers are supposed to take a step back this year, but they've got the best record in the NL. And he's got the most WAR in baseball. He's hitting .346 and he's stealing bases and looks spry. So, you know, this is an offense that runs around him too. So, I think that'll be funny. And then, you know, I think you got to throw Sean Murphy in that discussion, you know, just that the Braves squad is so good and he's been so good for them. And he plays such a premium position that that Murphy's going to be in the conversation too, along with Acuna. So you never know. Like, it's kind of funny. I think the top guys in the AL are probably, and the NL are probably all on the same team. It's probably Freeman, Betts, Murphy, and Acuna right now. And that's that. You know, you never know how they split up the votes on that. So
all right, let's end on this. Paul Severino from the Marlins and former MLB Network host is going to join us.
He's great. He's had me on sometimes to do some innings with him.
So you had the walk-off win by the D-backs yesterday, a four-game sweep of the Rockies.
You're tied
with the Dodgers. You know, Torrey Lovello, former A, he's a good friend of the program. We have him on all the time. And the last time, so they were recently in town, as you know, and Torrey was on with us, and he told us four things that make the Diamondbacks. And I want you to tell me, because you're obviously, when it comes to analytics, you're the man, right? Tell me what these analytics are. Love, trust, commitment, and effort. That's what they're built on. Love, trust, commitment, and effort. Can you tell me where I can find that on Baseball Reference, FanGraphs? I was looking for
that
it.
Must be
again, I'm not the guru of analytics. You know that. Where on FanGraphs can
love
I find
plus.
Love, trust, effort, and commitment?
Love plus. Trust plus. It's right there next to stuff plus.
So instead of B swing percentage, can I get effort swing percentage?
Yeah.
But there's something special going on, right? I mean, you got all these big payrolls. Dodgers are still a big payroll. Padres have committed almost $1 billion to salaries. Giants are throwing money at the problem. And here are the D-backs with their love, trust, effort, and commitment tied for first place on June 2nd.
I mean, you know, one of the things that the D-backs do that I think is underrated and more teams should do is just field a solid team. You know what I mean? Just you know, spend whatever ownership will let you spend. Just put together a solid team. Try to have no zeros anywhere, and develop over time. But also just, you know, if it takes signing Zach Davies to a small deal so you at least have a fifth starter, then do that, you know. If you don't have enough money to get in on Edwin Diaz, then sign Scott McGuff from Japan. And if he doesn't turn out to be a great reliever, he's going to be a fine one, you know. So they've done a really good job of doing these smaller deals, and putting together a good roster on a decent budget, while their young guys now are starting to hit the field. And Corbin Carroll, I think, you know, he's going to be in the conversation for MVPs in the future. I think he's a really special young player. And so they put together this sort of veterans that are good enough around these young players that are coming up. The one thing is they need bullpen help. You know, so they need to do something in that bullpen. I don't think love and trust can hold together that bullpen all year.
It's going to be hot this weekend. Get your Pilsners ready.
That's right. I'm going down to a beer fest, Firestone Walker Invitational Beer Fest. It's going to be
in Slow?
Yeah, I'm covering that beer festival in Slow tomorrow.
God bless you. Have a great time.
Well, pray for me because I'm also going to LCD Sound System tonight. So that's two big events in 2 days. Let's see if I can keep it together.
We're gonna have to give you some liver protection to go for your next concert. This liver product is brought to you by Eno Saris and The Athletic.
Sunday is all water and broccoli.
All right, buddy, we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for having me.
Play the Man is open and is closed.
The Eno Sarah Show is sponsored by Fieldwork Brewing Company. With 8 taproom locations in Northern California, Fieldwork brings you fresh craft beer direct from the source. Fieldwork will also ship beer direct to your door if you live in California. Visit fieldworkbrewing.com.
Great stuff. Peace. Eno, be well, my friend.
See you guys.
This has been a presentation of the Oakland Athletics.